Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast is always up to speed with Formula One, broadcasting tonight from the Vivid Seat Studio. And welcome back. The season is a go again this weekend. It's Spa-Francorchamps, the Belgian Grand Prix, one of my favorite circuits out of the entire year. And it's also Labor Day here in North America this weekend. And that is the unofficial end to summer because the kids go back to school next week. And even though we got three more weeks officially of summer, once the kids go back, it's basically back to work and back to normal for everyone. So it is, like I say, the unofficial end to summer. And it's gone really quickly. And talking about going really quickly or things going really quickly, I took a little bit of time off last week and I got to let you guys in on a bit of a secret because even though I didn't go away, I just had some time away from work and was just kind of hanging around doing my own thing. I decided I was going to take the week off. So last week's show, the top 10 show I did on the talking points or top 10 stories of the season so far, I actually recorded that the week before I recorded before the show that came out the week before, just the way it all worked out. Anyhow, after it dropped, I was sitting there somewhat nervously hoping that that the top 10 stories that I picked were going to actually make it through the entire week because I had this one thing, and it's happened not so much on this show, but my other podcast occasionally. You sit down, you do the program, you get everything all ready, and you set it all up for download, goes out there, and literally the next morning, something big breaks. And of course, Formula One's got a bigger reach than Major League Soccer, which is what my other podcast is about. And the impact on my side has been a little bit minimized from that front with the other show, but it's still disappointing. So I must say I was a little bit nervous at times. I might pick up my phone and check the latest F1 news and might be greeted by a story in Lewis Hamilton in shock move to Ferrari or something like that. But I dodged a bullet. And this time, pre-planning some content to go out there actually worked in my favor. But it's back to normal. It's back to racing this weekend and really looking forward to it. The second half of the season begins now. And why don't we do what we usually do around here when it's a race weekend or just a normal week, actually, just to review what the state of the union is, if you want to call it that, in the Drivers and Constructors Championships, because it's been a couple of weeks and I had to... remind myself this afternoon of exactly who's sitting where. I mean, it's Lewis Hamilton on top, of course. He's been there for quite a while. Lewis with 250 points ahead of his teammate Valtteri Bottas with 188. Max Verstappen in third in the work, not in the Constructors, but in the Drivers' Championship with 181 points. Sebastian Vettel for the first of the two Ferraris with 156 points. And Charles Leclerc, the second Ferrari, with 132 points. Pierre Gasly, interestingly, still listed as a Red Bull driver. Of course, he will make his re-debut for Toro Rosso this weekend at Spa-Francorchamps with Alex Albon going the other way to take Gasly's seat at Red Bull for the remainder of the season. Gasly has 63 points. And then moving over to the constructors' side, really, it's been a one-sided and lopsided lead that Mercedes had basically since the start of the season. Nobody else has been able to come close to them. Mercedes on top, 438 points. Ferrari second in the constructors with 288 points. And this is going to be an interesting storyline to follow the rest of the year. Ferrari ahead of Red Bull in the constructors right now, and Red Bull of 244 points really makes me wonder if Pierre Gasly had been able to score more points more regularly, combined with Max's points, whether or not they would be closer or ahead of Ferrari in the constructors championship. And then the only other team of note is McLaren, currently fourth in the constructors championship, well ahead of everybody else in the midfield pack. They have 82 points, which is substantially ahead of Toro Rosso, who round out the top five with 43 points. So, like I say, we are back to racing this weekend, and it has been quite an eventful couple of weeks. Usually, you kind of go into this summer holiday, the summer break, and it becomes everybody observing radio silence, and there isn't really typically too much news going around, but there's been a fair amount, especially, well, you'd expect in the week leading up to a Grand Prix, more news, but I thought this year in general, there seemed to be a little bit more news, but perhaps that's just my own colored take on things. But the first off, we have, and this might be a little bit worrying if you're a fan of any other team or driver than Mercedes, and apparently they have worked straight through the summer break. I don't know why. Obviously, they have pretty much an unassailable lead in both championships at the moment, but they are, I think, the benchmark, the gold standard by all the other teams really have to follow and live up to, because it never really ceases to amaze me that no matter what happens and how many races they win, they still seem genuinely excited every time either Lewis Hamilton or one of his teammates, either Nico Rosberg in the old days or more recently, of course, Valtteri Bottas win a race, that they still seem extremely excited and pumped about it and every championship that they win. So good on them. I mean, they put a lot of money into it, and it's, like I say, it sounds rather ominous if you're a rival of Ferrari, but that's you don't get anywhere without putting in the work, and that's certainly what they're doing. So Toto Wolff, the team principal at Mercedes, said that the summer shutdown was a welcome break, and he said the majority of the team personnel at their headquarters did and could recharge their batteries, but he was saying other team members were still working through the past couple of weeks, and especially with the team members at Brixworth, where they design and build their engines, work through the summer break to improve certain performance and reliability. Jesus, how can you tell I've had a couple of weeks off here? Anyways, Mercedes have been working on the performance and reliability components of their engine, and so that, well, I mean, this is, of course, the time of year when teams are typically looking towards what's going to happen for next year and the design for the cars and engines and everything well underway for 2020. But Mercedes, you'd think that out of all the teams out there that you wouldn't think they would need to focus on performance and reliability. But, of course, you don't get to be the best without doing the little things good and doing a lot of little things good, because you take those small steps and, of course, it's going to add up to a lot of big ones. But talking about a team that could learn a lot from what Mercedes has done over the past several years, and that's Renault. And Danny Ricciardo says that in 2020, Renault need to take bigger steps. And, well, I think that's a bit of an understatement. But, of course, you could understand that a Renault driver is not going to be overly critical in public at any rate, especially in the media, about what they need to do. And he says that they do need to take these bigger steps with the car if they want to reach their target of challenging for podiums in 2020, and that really seems like a long shot. Obviously, at this point, they've really plateaued and regressed even to a certain extent over the past several years, and what was seemed to be promising within the first couple of years after taking over at Lotus and getting back into F1 has been kind of a slow climb up and a bit of a plateau. And now, like I say, they're not even in the fourth in the Constructors Championship, which was where they were last year, which it seemed a lot more promising, especially with the news that they increased the personnel in the team this year. They have a bigger budget to work with, and just the experience that that Renault has designing and building and racing cars and winning championships and engines, of course. I mean, they've been they've won multiple championships as an engine supplier, as a manufacturer, so they know how to get it done. But it really seems like the glory years of the early 2000s especially when Fernando Alonso won his world championships back-to-back in 2005 and 2006. Seems a long time ago. But it's one thing to set these goals that they have to, what they want to achieve in Formula One. It's another thing of actually doing it. But Ricciardo, and to his credit, he maintains that he has no regrets about leaving Red Bull, even though that they've won a couple of races this year. And he was always a semi-regular, at least over the past couple of years, on the podium and managing to win several races for himself as a Red Bull driver. But so, I mean, good for him for sticking with the decision or not having regrets about the decision that he made to leave Red Bull. And we'll talk a little bit about them and Honda in the moment. I mean, certainly there's a lot of room for growth for them still and potential. And obviously, I think that Red Bull and Honda is going to be a situation to watch very closely next year and beyond. But he says that the start of his 2 year with Renault has been on par with what he expected, but he expects also that the team is going to improve. And Ricciardo said, quote, "I don't want to say it's been in line with expectations because obviously I'd hoped for more, but I knew it wasn't going to happen like this. So if I look at Canada, the qualifying, I'd actually say that exceeded probably some expectation in the first few races. But then obviously some other races like Austria, that was lower than our expectations. Up until now, let's say I'm somewhere in the middle with expectations, but I would now expect that the second half of the season to have some regular, whatever it is, top six finishes." So, well, that seems to be a bit of a lofty ambition, even to get into the top six by the end of the year. They really have been a little bit erratic and disappointing throughout the year, but who knows? Perhaps if they can get their act together, that they'll be able to climb back and maybe get to where they were this time last year. Because certainly, one would have thought that where they were last year, clearly, certainly behind Red Bull and the top three teams by a long ways, but they were certainly clear by a small margin at any rate of a lot of the other teams in the midfield pack. So to see them regress and go fall further back down the field compared to they were just only a year ago is not very encouraging to see. Anyway, moving along, and well, not really moving along, we're going to stick with Renault. Ricciardo's teammate, Nico Hülkenberg, says that Belgium and Italy are make or break for Renault, especially with his team's 2019 campaign at any rate. And I think that really is true. I mean, we've already got a dozen races behind us. So the calendar is heavily weighted in the first half of the year rather than the second half after the summer break. I mean, we're already at the beginning of September. September, October, and November are going to go very quickly. And Abu Dhabi, the season finale, is always typically the last week of November. And, you know, as much as I'm enjoying and love summer all year long, it certainly is going to disappear pretty quickly. And once these races start coming, they're going to come pretty thick and fast. And before you know it, it is really going to be down to the last couple of races. So hopefully the World Championship will be decided closer to the end rather than now. But for other guys like Ricciardo, guys like Hülkenberg, and teams like Renault, they really starting their running out of time to do something and salvage something positive from the season. And if they don't get some results in the next couple of weeks, then, well, the opportunities to really make up any ground on their rivals and make up any ground in the championship as well is going to be a very tall order, because Renault is not even in the top six in the constructors. I mean, they're behind McLaren, and they're also behind Toro Rosso. So, you know, there's a long way to go. So I should say they're not in the top five, but there's a long way for them to go to try and get to where they are. I mean, fourth is, and being able to catch McLaren seems like a pretty difficult thing. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they can catch up and pass Toro Rosso, because I think Toro Rosso now, despite the rotation of Albon and Gasly to and from Toro Rosso to Red Bull, I think it's a good solid team or a good driver lineup that Toro Rosso has. I think Danny Kvyat this year has done a pretty good and reliable job. I mean, getting a podium in Germany, even though it was wet and bizarre circumstances, he's been pretty solid, I think, the rest of the year. And I think he's matured a little bit over the past couple of years. And Pierre Gasly was pretty decent for them the last couple of seasons as well. So going back to where he came from is just an opportunity again to get into a situation that he's familiar with. And I wonder how he'll be able to perform and what he'll be able to do back in that environment and the familiarity, and perhaps even even a little bit of comfort of Toro Rosso compared to the big pressure cooker of the main Red Bull team. So keep your eyes on that. So sticking with Nico Hülkenberg, he said that he's teased a more exciting Thursday at the Belgian Grand Prix. And there's also reports out there that perhaps he might be losing his seat to Mercedes reserve driver Esteban Ocon, because it's looking more and more that that Mercedes will retain Valtteri Bottas after this year. So that that'll be another interesting one. And Hülkenberg, again, a very interesting guy. He's got, what, over 150 Grand Prix to his credit now, off the top of my head, and still doesn't have a podium to show for it. And this is a guy that won at Le Mans a couple of years ago, and very highly thought of in the Formula One world. So surprising that that he's never been able to do it. But I guess he just hasn't been at the right team at the right time and at the right point in his career. And I don't know. It seems a little bit interesting. I mean, Ocon, of course, is a Mercedes driver, and that was one of the things that that was talked about a lot over last winter. That when the musical chairs of the 2019 silly season, or for the driver rumors and everything and moves that precipitated this year, that was the one thing that was almost marked as a knock against Esteban Ocon was his ties to Mercedes and racing last year and a half at Force India or Racing Point. And that was one of the things that labeled him as maybe undesirable for some teams. But whether or not he can work his way out of Mercedes and into a drive at Renault, that would be interesting. I mean, we've seen that he seems to be a pretty good young driver. Looks like he's got a lot of potential and a lot of speed. And I think he'll be probably... maybe not best known, but certainly one of the things that stands out about Ocon over the past, well, the first year and a half of his racing career. This year, obviously, the only times we see Ocon is usually in the garage at Mercedes on a Sunday afternoon. But other than that, I think the one or several memories that that will come into mind will be the clashes that he had with his former teammate at Force India, Sergio Perez, and and some of the grief and some of the aggro that they caused team principal Otmar Safnauer over the past year and a bit. But I really find it, I wouldn't say a stretch, but certainly I would find it very interesting if he was able to land a job at Renault. And I'm not really sure what to expect. I mean, they haven't confirmed Valtteri Bottas to be sticking with the Mercedes next year with Lewis Hamilton, and that's always been a bit of an interesting situation to discuss or to think about, because before this year, Toto Wolff was saying that if Bottas wanted to stick with the Mercedes, he'd have to perform on Lewis Hamilton like terms. And I guess that's up to debate how close he's actually come to that this year, but certainly he's doing a very solid job contributing to the team. I mean, he's delivered quite a lot of points to them, and then he's a big part of why they are so far ahead in the Constructors' Championships at the moment. So I would be surprised if he didn't, and that's why I think that it makes sense for a guy like Ocon to look elsewhere. And whether or not he ends up with a Mercedes team, I don't know what's going to happen, obviously, with Kubica at Williams and some of the other teams. I know a lot of the driver lineups already confirmed and set for next year, so certainly be interesting to see what happens over there. But Hülkenberg, talking about more exciting Thursdays now, he was referring to something that came out, and that was a picture in a French publication, which pretty much said that Ocon's move to Renault is a done deal, and even had a mock-up of Ocon wearing a Renault race suit. And, well, Nico Hülkenberg, I think he does have a bit of a sense of humor, but I think that he'll be just focused on getting done what he needs to get done. But also just talking about Ocon, one of the other rumored destinations that he could end up in is at Haas. And again, that's not a Mercedes customer team. So if he does go somewhere else other than, you know, sticking with Mercedes themselves, if they decide to part way with Bottas, which seems unlikely, it would be fascinating to see where he ends up. Anyways, I'm behind schedule for a break here. Plenty more coming up here on the Overtime Media Network, so please don't go away. We'll be back after this very short break. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. All right, well, welcome back to the show. And I forgot to mention off the top of the program here, and I'm a big sports fan, not just Formula One, but many other things. And of course, NFL season is just around the corner. I can't wait. I mean, it's literally just days away now. And if you're heading out on opening day to watch your favorite team, make sure to check out Vivid Seats and use the promo code OVERTIME in the Vivid Seats mobile app to save up to $100 on all ticket purchases for first-time customers only. And I can't wait. I have no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl this year. Of course, that's part of the fun, but looking forward to getting it going. I live up here in Seahawks country, and I've been a big Seahawks fan for years and years and years. And if you don't believe me, I have the Rick Meyer jersey upstairs in my closet that I can pull out. And for those of you who know what I'm talking about, that refers to a period in the Seahawks history that really wasn't their greatest. Anyways, let's stick with Formula One because that's what we're here to talk about. And Ferrari has said that a bigger calendar is a risk when coupled with the new budget cap that is going to be introduced in 2021, and that comes courtesy of Ferrari team principal Mattia Binotto. And Formula One is expected to expand now to a record 22 races for next year. And Liberty Media, the owners, are maintaining that they want to push new events and to the schedule. And that could even balloon and get bigger even further. So Binotto says that he's not opposed to the expansion of the calendar in principle. And he's aware of the business, what he calls business necessities. But he says that the new races will also demand personnel reinforcements. And I can imagine that that's going to be the case. I mean, with what we've seen over the past several years with the 20 or more races, and they've always said that was about the limit, but we're going to add another race and they're trying to push for more. I don't know what that magic number is. Obviously, I'm not on the inside, but it just makes sense from a logistics point of view that that at some point the amount of people that they have working in the factories, working in the pits, working to get the cars from one race track to the other, just there's a lot of manpower that goes into it. And Binotto says, quote, "I think we need to first make sure from the financial side we are doing the right choices." And that's what he told in an interview to motorsport.com. "There should be a benefit in terms of the overall financial balance. If the balance is positive, yes, we need to reorganize ourselves. We cannot afford an entire season of 24 races with the same single individuals." And that's an excellent point. It's just like, when does it become too much, and when are resources and people stretched too thin? And that'll be really interesting because Formula One is poised to introduce a $175 million spending cap for 2021. And he says, or Binotto, that is, says that's very high for the small teams, which of course it is for some of the small players in Formula One, spending a fraction of what the teams like Ferrari and Mercedes and even Red Bull do. But saying that that the big teams may overspend in the next couple of years to make up for the impact of the budget cap in advance. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens and how they implement that. But when you have teams that already have several hundred people in it, of course, if you're Ferrari or Mercedes or one of the big teams, adding more people, of course, is just a matter of being able to just reallocate resources and get the people in. And I can imagine it would be more of an impact on the smaller teams that that typically have to do more with less. I mean, take a Racing Point or Force India, and their previous incarnation was one of those teams that were always pretty much been a shining of light, of being able to do more with less over the years. And when it comes to things like having to expand a calendar, and where do you get all these these extra people from for all these specialized jobs and things that need to be taken into consideration. So that'll be it's going to be tough. but it'll be interesting to see how it's going to be implemented and how it really comes to fruition. I just lost my notes here, but one of the other things that I wanted to stories that came out is that the Spanish Grand Prix has officially secured a 2020 calendar slot, so that's good to see. And that was it was under serious threat there for a while, because it seems that they've only signed a 1-year agreement. So who knows? I guess there is more than just the technical rules and regulations up in the air for 2021. So who knows if we'll be in the same position this time next year with Barcelona and the Spanish Grand Prix coming back. And I've said it many times on the program here that sometimes I find that the race and the track there doesn't always lead to very exciting Grand Prix. I mean, it's had its moments over the years, but part of the problem is that they've done so much testing there over the years. I think that the drivers can almost drive it with their eyes closed. And sometimes I think it makes for a little less exciting racing. But Spain is a race that and a track that I've been to in person, and it's a wonderful place to go and watch a Grand Prix. I really enjoyed it. I mean, we were there in 2014, so several years ago now, but I mean, the location is wonderful. I mean, it's only maybe about 45-minute trip outside of the city of Barcelona, and it was easy to get to. The weather was lovely, and it was just a wonderful experience. So just from a sentimental and personal point of view, it would have been very disappointing to see that one drop off the calendar. So good to see that they're back, and hopefully they can get that sorted out for 2021 and beyond. So just let's talk a little bit now about Red Bull and Honda. And Honda has admitted to the gaps in the leading F1 engines is still there. And I think that's probably self-explanatory to a certain extent, but that comes from Honda's technical director Toyoharu Tanabe, and he does admit that the gap to the leaders is still there. And I think that I think that they should be very encouraged, though. I think that what we've seen this year from the partnership between Red Bull and Honda, it seems to be like they were made for each other. Honda and McLaren, obviously, we don't need to go into that whole sordid and sad story again, because it's just way too depressing. But the way that it roundabout worked, and the way that they came together with Red Bull after they had, well, I wouldn't say similar problems, but certainly a souring and disappointing end to their relationship with Renault, with which they were very successful when they were prior to the V6 turbo hybrid era, and of course won many world championships and constructors titles when they were partnered together with them. And that just looked like that was one of those situations where they were just together way too long. Renault just weren't able to build the same sort of engine in this new era of Formula One as they were previously, and this is even going back to as far as 2014. I remember Christian Horner lamenting at that time that they just didn't have enough power compared to, say, Ferrari and Mercedes even at that point. And of course that relationship just worsened over the years, even to the point that I think Cyril Abiteboul, the team principal at Renault, and of course when Red Bull was a customer team that I think he said last year, the beginning of 2018, that whenever Horner was complaining, they'd basically tuned him out at that point. So you could see where that went. But anyways, after they decided to make the switch and partner up with Honda this year and beyond, it just seems that there's a lot more teamwork together, because I don't really know all of the ins and outs and everything that happened with McLaren, but it just seemed that they seem to have a really good working relationship with Red Bull, and to win a couple of races so far this year, I think is really positive for them. And I know that they were under less than ideal conditions at times. I mean, it's always ideal when you win, but I mean, it wasn't like in Germany that Max went out there and beat the Ferraris and the Mercedes cars flat out. But he was just one of the guys that managed to keep his car on the track for the most part. I know he had a bit of a moment there, but was able able to basically survive a battle of attrition. Now, where he was dominant was at Austria earlier this summer. And I mean, that was an absolutely wonderful and amazing performance from Max Verstappen. He was just the right guy in the right car on that afternoon, and was just better than and faster than both the Mercedes and the Ferraris. And the way that he'd blew past all of them in his the way that he went on to win that race was impressive. I mean, we can maybe just put the discussion about you know, what was that, a fair pass that he made on Charles Leclerc, the way that he barged his way through, for another day. The end of the discussion is that was his first win with Honda Power, and the first of two so far this year. But Honda and Red Bull, you expect them to do well in situations like that. And again, he was also very competitive at Monaco. Wasn't able to get around Lewis Hamilton and take the win, but again, a bit of a tricky place to do so. I mean, he certainly tried. And then again at the Hungarian Grand Prix just before the summer break there, that was another track, shorter, twistier, more technical, and a bit of a slower track. And I really, honestly, struggle a little bit to think that he'll be able to challenge seriously, at any rate, under normal conditions, the Mercedes or even the Ferraris at the next couple of races at Spa and at Monza for the Italian Grand Prix, because those are power circuits. There's some long portions of the track that are flat out, and we know that the Ferrari's got great straight line speed. We know that the Mercedes is just faster in general, so it will be fun to watch this weekend, especially at Spa, and just I think see where the true differences are. I know that at Hungary that Max was much quicker than the Ferraris, but that wasn't really a track I expected Ferrari to do well at, just due to the fact that they do they just don't have a lot of downforce, and they really suffer for the way that they designed the aerodynamics on this car. But for this year, but just sticking with that, I mean, even though they admit that there's a gap between themselves and the other top Formula One teams, they do say, and that Tanabe was saying also, that they really believe that that they're going in the right direction. And Honda's F1 managing director Masashi Yamamoto told motorsport.com that Honda is weighing up whether or not they want to stay in Formula One after the end of next season. That's nothing new, but the wins that they've had recently are certainly good timing for them, because they're ahead of a key board meeting. And Yamamoto believes that that they're pretty much where they hope to be right now with Red Bull this year. And what they didn't say earlier was that they want to win five races this season, but they certainly want to score more points than Red Bull scored last year with Renault. So they have their work cut out for them. I mean, certainly Max has done more than his fair share. So it kind of makes you wonder what sort of pressure there was applied, or what things were said between Honda and Red Bull, and if that had anything to do with the decision to move Pierre Gasly back to Toro Rosso and try out Alex Albon instead. I mean, that's a bit of a risky move. I mean, there's no guarantee that Albon is going to be able to do a better job than Gasly and score more points for the rest of the season. I mean, it's possible, but I think that in general, I think Honda should be satisfied of what's happened so far this year. And I've said several times on the podcast that based on what I've seen so far this year, that the goal was to at least keep them on the same level that they were last year with Renault. And I think that the argument can certainly be made that Red Bull with Honda power is a little bit ahead, if not more ahead, than where they were last year with Renault power. So sticking with other midfield teams now, Kimi Raikkonen is supposedly easy to manage for Alfa Romeo, and that comes from Alfa F1 boss Frederic Vasseur. And he says that the team's relationship with Kimi is working perfectly, and benefiting from very transparent and black and white discussions that they had. And you know, prior to him going there last year, I mean, I think there was a lot of speculation that when the news first came out, and before details were really made public about the deal that Kimi had signed there for 2019 and 2020, was that he knew that in all the discussions that they had, what was good, what was bad about the team, and they were pretty open and forthcoming about what they called, or what Vasseur called, the real situation of the company. And so maybe now, because of that, when there are issues that come up, that that Kimi is not necessarily surprised or taken aback by it. But apparently Kimi is fully committed to the team and to the project. And Vasseur goes on to say that he doesn't know how Raikkonen was last year with Ferrari, but he said that at Alfa Romeo, it's working for them perfectly. And it's great to see Kimi Raikkonen still in Formula One. He scored, I think it's 31 out of Alfa's 32 points this year. And Giovinazzi, his teammate, has only scored a single solitary point, which is disappointing. I mean, we saw at times last year, I mean, certainly Alfa, or which was then Sauber still, were making headlines more because of what Charles Leclerc was doing in the car compared to his teammate Marcus Ericsson, and really making himself known. And of course, what he did last year certainly played a huge part in him landing the role at Ferrari for this year. So really good to see Kimi around. It's a little bit disappointing we don't see him in the news conferences, especially after races, because he's scored a podium or something. So I kind of miss the Kimi quotes. We don't quite get as much of it here in Canada, I mean, other than race day, but it is what it is. Anyways, time for another quick break. Don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment. All right, welcome back to the podcast. It's Always Up to Speed with Formula One here, recording in the Vivid Steets studio, and sticking with Alfa Romeo, who we were talking about just before the break there. Frederik Vasseur, the team principal, says that the 1.5% progress that they've made this year is huge, and that Alfa is improving drastically, has made a huge step with its potential this year, and that certainly bodes well and is promising. I certainly wondered after they made the move official, after being just the engine supplier and sponsor last year. I mean, because it was Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing or something last year. Anyways, now that they are a full-blown manufacturer, of course, it's going to take time to really get it to what they want it to be, their vision of things. So I would like to see them do a little bit more. I mean, as I was saying just before the break, we were teased a little bit, I think, at times last year as to the potential of Alfa. And I think a lot of that last year was due to the raw, pure talent of Charles Leclerc and some of the amazing things that he did. I mean, he was so much better and constantly and consistently better for most of the season than his then teammate Marcus Ericsson in an identical machinery. And you just knew that the Sauber last year, I mean, it was a good car, but not great. I mean, I guess, you know, it is what it is for a middle-of-the-pack Formula One car. And they come, broken three of the funk and the runt or the rut that they were in a couple of years previously, because in the first year, what was it, in 2018, in 2017, when they had the mismatched 2016 power unit in the new 2017 spec car, that just didn't work. And Wehrlein and Marcus Ericsson were just they were the Williams of of that era, that year. But after they had a car and an engine that were meant to be together, then things started to go in the right direction, and last year was a decent year for them. And I often wonder, I mean, it's more or less, but not really, but still kind of is a Ferrari B team, so I wonder how much potential that they have and how far they can go. But if they could move up there, it'd be kind of fun to see whether or not they could move up through the midfield there and say get close and nip at the heels of McLaren, or just at least pull away from the other teams there. But certainly having a guy like Kimi Raikkonen there, a former world champion who's been there, done that, and seen it all, has to be invaluable. I mean, Kimi's got one more year to go next year. I mean, he's almost as old as I am, and he's still racing in Formula One, and I'll miss him when he leaves. And I really wonder what Kimi's plans will be after he leaves, or he decides to hang up his helmet and racing gloves and climb out of the cockpit for good, whether or not he wants to stick in Formula One in some sort of form, or if he just decides to go off and do whatever it is Kimi Raikkonen wants to do. But certainly enjoy him while he's still around. So, okay, we're moving into the part of the show now that is going to be very heavily devoted to Ferrari. And we're going to start with Mattia Bonato saying that Ferrari reliability roles or woes are unrelated to his new role as a team principal. So they have obviously had struggles all year long. A lot has had to do with the design of the car. A lot of it has been Ferrari not helping Ferrari out themselves. And it's definitely been a very difficult year. And it is frustrating and disappointing to watch. I mean, over the past couple of years, we've seen them kind of inch towards Mercedes and close the gap. And certainly through the first half of 2018 last year, I mean, Sebastian Vettel and Ferrari looked like an unbeatable combination until... it wasn't until really Monza last year when things started really going wrong and things really weren't working out for them, and it just got worse and worse and worse as the season went on. Because going into the summer break last year, I mean, Sebastian Vettel was making a legit claim to be a contender for the world championship last year. I mean, he led it for a good portion of the year until things started to fall off and they started to have their problems. And this year just is not a good look for them. Like the problems that they've had, obviously, with the design of the car, but some of the mechanical issues that they had. I mean, look at the Charles Leclerc back at the Grand Prix in Bahrain, second race of the year. Looked like he was just going to hands down win that one in rather impressive fashion, and a problem with the engine. Really snuck up on him late. And I mean, he's lucky for two reasons that he was able still to finish on the podium and claim third place was the fact that A, there weren't too many laps left in that race. B, that the Renaults of Nico Hülkenberg and Danny Ricciardo mysteriously and somewhat strangely decided to expire at almost identically the same moment. And having to bring out a safety car there right at the very end. So definitely that played into Charles' favor. But the other things, like the mechanical issues that they've had in qualifying, like in France and in Germany, like just really unfortunate and disappointing to see. I mean, it's frustrating to see a four-time world champion like Sebastian Vettel not being able to get out of the pits and even go in there to try and claim that pole position. I mean, they haven't always had that opportunity this year, just due to the fact that they don't have the best car or car that can compete on a level close to the same level as Mercedes. And seeing Sebastian, not being able to do that is sad to see. It's also that we saw with Charles Leclerc as well. He's not been immune for that as well. I mean, there have been other times, of course, where they haven't helped themselves. I mean, Vettel had a little whoopsie there in Bahrain when dicing with Lewis Hamilton. And of course, we've had the big discussion about the incident in Canada when he was leading that race. I mean, those are a little bit different. And then, of course, Charles Leclerc hasn't been completely blame-free. Of course, he had a terrible weekend at Monaco, and that just didn't go well for him. And then also when he stuffed it into the wall at the chicane at Azerbaijan around the Baku City circuit there. But the thing is, I mean, it is frustrating and disappointing to see the problems that they're having. But it was interesting that they did decide last year over the winter to part ways with Maurizio Arrivabene and appoint Mattia Bonato as team principal. And of course, when the team struggles, I mean, people are going to want answers. It's like, well, why have you gone backwards and why are you having these problems? And of course, those are always going to come to the guy that's in charge. And of course, the natural thing is going to be are these problems happening because of your appointment to team principal or whatever it might be. So it is interesting to hear Bonato's take on it. And he said, and I quote, "I don't think anything has changed compared to last year or the year before. It's true as well that we have never been too strong on the reliability in past seasons. So it's something that should be, in terms of overall approach of the two development, addressed. It's something with which we're all concerned back in the factory." So obviously it is something that's on their radar, but I think that it's absolutely crucial, and this is going to be one of the understatements of the week, that they really need to get their design philosophy and really get things nailed in the design and the manufacture for the car for next year, because it certainly is very disappointing to see them. I mean, I don't think it's too far of a stretch, and I think it's a fair shout to be made that they've fallen even behind Red Bull this year. And I think we saw that right from the very beginning. I mean, it was Valtteri Bottas that disappeared down the track in Melbourne, and it was the Red Bull of Max Verstappen that and of course Lewis Hamilton that were faster than the two Ferraris, and it was Sebastian Vettel that benefited a little bit from team orders, and Charles Leclerc was certainly faster than him in that race, and just didn't have the opportunity to go on and do anything. Had to hold station behind Sebastian. But it's an ongoing thing, and I mean they're even talking now that they really should have focused more on downforce, and that's something else that was said by Mattia Binotto this year. So the SF90 does have superior straight line speed. It is there's no question about it. It is one of the fastest cars out there. We know it's a very powerful and good engine, but it is that downforce deficiency that has been a real Achilles heel for Ferrari this year. And Binotto does admit now, and of course hindsight is always 20/20, but he says that they should have placed greater emphasis on downforce in the car, the design of the car this year, because it would have also helped work with the new 2019 spec Pirelli tire. So interesting to hear them really come out and admit it. I mean, it's kind of something that we all figured that was going on with Ferrari and some of the issues that they've been having all year. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out over the next several months as they get this car designed. And of course, we won't know for sure until next year, until the Australian Grand Prix. And well, the first several races, I mean, one race is just a little bit too much or too small of a sample to really make any sort of judgment calls on, because we can't go from winter testing, because after the first round of winter testing this year, all the talk was Ferrari's going to be, you know, a second and a half or 2 seconds a lap quicker than everyone else, including Mercedes, and it's turned out to be almost completely the opposite. As once they got out of winter testing and got down to racing for real, it was pretty obvious that the advantage they had in winter testing, I wouldn't say it was smoke and mirrors, but it certainly wasn't what everybody had been led to believe or was expecting based on the winter testing results. But just talking about Sebastian Vettel now for a little bit, despite all the things that have gone on, Sebastian Vettel is still apparently focused on winning a world championship with Ferrari. And to me, this seems like a bit of a no-brainer. I mean, this that comes from Mattia Binotto in an interview with Motorsport.com. He said, quote, "I think that his objective hasn't changed, to become world champion with Ferrari." And let's admit it, it's a pretty small select group of people that make it into Formula One as a driver, and even a smaller group of drivers that actually are able to go and drive for Ferrari. I mean, they've been there since day one. It's an iconic mark. It's everybody knows what a Ferrari is. You know, even if you're not a fan of Formula One and motorsports, everybody knows, just from a you know, a luxury car point of view, everybody knows the name. So there's that. But also from the Formula One side, I mean, there is a lot of prestige. There is a lot of history there. I mean, you look at some of the great names that have raced for Ferrari over the years. And Sebastian Vettel, I know he's had his struggles over the past year or so, but there's no doubt in my mind that even though that he's had his problems, some of his own fault, some of the teams, some have been a combination, of course, that there is desire to win a world championship with Ferrari. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, we'd all do anything to get into Formula One or drive a car. So, I mean, a Formula One car. So, I mean, he's extremely lucky to be able to do so, and even luckier to have won races and world championships. But you just have to think that it's been quite a long time now since Ferrari has won a world championship. And you just have to think that, you know, if you're a guy that's been around Formula One as long as Sebastian Vettel has, and you're looking for things to check off your list and try and accomplish during your time in the sport, that winning winning a world championship with Ferrari would have to be one of those top items. So that does not surprise me at all. But Sebastian's going to need a little bit of help from Ferrari, and needs a good competitive car to do so. But we'll talk about that as we go into our final break for the night. So please don't go away. We'll be back after a very short message from our sponsors. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to Scuderia F1 here, broadcasting from the Vivid Seats studio. And as we go into the final segment of the show for this week, just sticking with Ferrari, Mattia Binotto says that Ferrari are very surprised how much Charles Leclerc has improved in 2019. I know he's only fifth in the world championship at the moment, but I mean, he's been impressive. I mean, at times we've seen maybe the less than what we would expect from Charles Leclerc, but hey, he's still a young guy. He's still learning the ropes. I mean, you can look at the accident that he had at Baku, maybe some of the bad things that he had happened to him at Monaco, but still, I mean, he's doing, I think, very, very well in Ferrari in his first year. I mean, he's only in his second year in Formula One, and I think that there's still so much potential and room for Charles Leclerc to grow as a person and as a Formula One driver, and I think that the best is yet to come from him. And certainly I think the question is, one-on-one, is he better and faster than Sebastian Vettel? And I think in some cases, yes. I know that that Sebastian's probably, from a veteran, an experienced driver point of view, he's got the edge there. I mean, you look at the strategy that Sebastian had at the Hungarian Grand Prix, going in for a late pit stop, compared to Charles, who tried to go all the way to the end on the hard tires. And that was another good bit of race management from Sebastian's point of view. Even though he dropped quite far back, he was able to close that gap from that he had to Charles Leclerc, and was able to pass him. But Charles, I think his time will come. I mean, it's disappointing that some of the things that have happened. I mean, like Baku, I was saying, and the opportunity to claim pole there, the opportunity to win his first race back in Bahrain. But the issue that he had with the car, obviously, cruelly snatched that one out of his hands. But his time will come. I mean, he's still very, very young, and I have no doubt that he's got a long career in Formula One ahead of him. And I think that once he's able to get over that hump and just get that first win, that it'll just be one of many, and it will be very, very fun and exciting to watch. He certainly is one of those guys that will be the next generation that once the Sebastian Vettels and Lewis Hamiltons of the world retire and move away from Formula One in the next several years, it will be guys like Max Verstappen and will be guys like Charles Leclerc that will become the new generation of superstars in Formula One. And Max says he believes that he will have other future Formula One rivals besides Charles Leclerc. And he says that it's an amazing opportunity for the karting rivals to race each other again. I mean, it was fun to watch some of the moments that they've had this year. I mean, Charles obviously wasn't impressed or too happy with the way that Max barged his way through at the Austrian Grand Prix late in the race. I mean, it was a tough, aggressive move, but I think at the end of the day, it might have come up close to that imaginary line in the sand of what goes and what doesn't go in Formula One. And I think that maybe he had he got right up close and tight to that line in that move, but I don't think that he crossed over it. But it will be fun to see where it goes from here with these two guys. I mean, we've seen a little bit of it this year, and then of course we saw on the flip side after the Austrian Grand Prix at Silverstone at the British Grand Prix afterwards, just how relenting and how tough Charles Leclerc was. He's still obviously a little bit ticked off about what happened between him and Max at Austria previously, and really aggressively defended his position on that day. But yeah, it's interesting how Max says that first of all, he says he gets on really well with Leclerc, and but it'll be interesting to see where other guys might come from that challenge. And Max throws out names like Lando Norris and potentially guys like George Russell and Alex Albon. I mean, Lando, I think, has acquitted himself very well in his first year at McLaren. And I think I'm starting to understand and appreciate more and more, you know, why Zach Brown was reluctant to let him go over a year ago when approached by Toro Rosso, because, Brendan Hartley wasn't really working out for them even in the first third or quarter of the season last year. And they were looking to try and get some sort of loan deal to get Lando there for the rest of 2018. And 2019 was the rumor at the time. And Zach said that they just weren't going to let him go. And it was an interesting decision to pair Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz of McLaren this year. But certainly when you look at them, fourth in the world championship right now in the constructors, and Lando contributing a fair share and a good portion of those points is proof that they made the right decision. And Lando, of course, I think has been impressive quite often, and certainly one race that stands out for me is the French Grand Prix, when he had mechanical problems right at the end and was still able to struggle and bring the car home. I can't remember now off the top of my head if he was able to bring it home in the points, or if he finished, I think it was either he finished 9th or 10th or 11th, but certainly he did a wonderful job to keep the car on the track and keep it going despite all the problems that they had very, very late in the race. So anyways, let's talk a little bit now about some of the things coming up this weekend. It is the I was going to say Spanish Grand Prix, but we talked about that earlier in the show. It is the Belgian Grand Prix, in fact. So some of the information that we have for Spa-Francorchamps, again, one of my favorite circuits, 44 laps, a circuit length of just a hair over 7 kilometers, a total race distance of 308.052 kilometers, and Valtteri Bottas as the lap record there, and that's a 146.286, which he set last year. And the tires that are being supplied by Pirelli this week are the hard C1s, the medium C2s, and the soft C3s. And, honestly, guys, I can't see anybody other than Mercedes winning this race this weekend. But, there are some portions of the track that are, flat out and very much a power circuit. So is this a race where potentially Ferrari could challenge? I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, we've seen how they've struggled on some of the more high downforce circuits. I mean, they weren't even in the conversation for the Hungarian Grand Prix, despite the fact that that Vettel was able to make a name for himself late in the race and pip third place from his teammate, but still they were miles behind Max Verstappen in the Red Bull, and even further behind Lewis Hamilton. But that's just the way it is. But go to a track now, and again, Monza in a couple of weeks when they go there. Again, lots of flat-out portions. So could these be a couple of races where Ferrari might... they might not reckon that or fancy themselves for a win, but you would think that these tracks where there's more straight line and straight sections of the track, that's going to be auspicious and favorable to them. So we'll wait and see to what they can do there. But just checking the weather forecast now for Spa-Francorchamps, and it looks like it's going to be pretty good. Certainly, I'm just taking this at face value, but it doesn't look like there is any rain in the forecast for the next several days. And it looks like that that come Saturday afternoon for qualifying, it looks like it's going to be sunny to start the day after a little bit of mist early in the morning. And it looks like there may be calling for a high of about 23-24 degrees mid-afternoon on Saturday, mid-20s anyway. So it looks like it's going to be nice and sunny. And again, on Sunday for race day itself, looks like it's going to be a little bit cooler, but it doesn't look like there's any rain in the forecast. So we'll wait and see how that plays out. Certainly, we have seen plenty of wet races at Spa over the years, and certainly not beyond the realm of possibility. It's one of those places in the world that that rains fairly frequently and has made for some interesting races over the years. I mean, mean, I think we all remember the big incident. Those of us that have been Formula One fans for a long time will remember about 20 years ago when David Coulthard managed to slice his car in half thanks to Michael Schumacher, who was touring around the track after a problem that he had. And that was a race that was even had to be restarted after a big crash at La Source, the first corner. And, it was a lot of expensive Formula One cars getting broken and smashed into little pieces. But apart from that, that was one of those moments that really stood out in everything that's happened over the years at Spa, Francorchamps. And, Lewis Hamilton, seems like he tops all the charts for all the other Grand Prix. He's only a three-time winner at Spa. The most recently, he won it there in 2017. And going back to 1998, that race I was just talking about, that was actually won by Damon Hill, who was driving for Jordan at that time. So the drivers that have won it multiple or more times than Lewis include Jim Clark and Kimi Raikkonen, who together have won it four times each. Ayrton Senna won there five times, and Michael Schumacher has won there six times. So certainly a track that Lewis, I think, will want to improve his stats upon. I mean, he's already in some impressive company. I mean, not only is Damon Hill a three-time winner, Sebastian Vettel's a three-time winner. He won there last year, of course, won there in 2011, 2013 as well. But the great Juan Manuel Fangio won three times at the Belgian Grand Prix in the early and mid-1950s. So there are some very, very big names up there. Anyways, going back to last year, it was Sebastian Vettel winning the race, beating Lewis Hamilton by 11 seconds. Max Verstappen was third on the day. Valtteri Bottas was in fourth. Sergio Perez and Esteban Ocon were fifth and sixth for Force India. Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen seventh and eighth respectively for Haas. Ninth was Pierre Gasly in the Toro Rosso, and 10th was Marcus Ericsson in the Sauber last year. So kind of cool to see, and it was one of those races. It was kind of a statement race, I think, for Vettel last year, especially having the frustrating, disappointing race in his home race at Hockenheim, sliding off in the stadium section when we had a bit of a shower and stuffing it into the gravel, and then after that again at going to Hungary just before the summer break, being held up by Valtteri Bottas for many laps, and then by that point it was just too late and too far to catch Lewis Hamilton, who went on to win that one. And that was sort of kind of, I wouldn't say the momentum shift in the world championship, but definitely was one that that Lewis needed to kind of put his just to indicate again that he was still in it, and that there was a lot of racing left in 2018. But to Sebastian Vettel's credit, and also to Ferrari's, they came out at Spa, and an 11 second gap, 11 seconds over Hamilton to win that race, I think speaks for itself. And Vettel looked like he was good for that one, and it just seemed that it was going to be one of those races he was destined to win, unless the car let him down, or there was some other circumstances out of his control, such as the weather or safety car, any one of those things that would snatch victory from his hands. Anyways, I think that is a good place to leave it off for this week. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show. It's good to be back. Great to be talking about racing again, rather than just rehashing things as we have done for the past couple of weeks. But hey, we do what we do in the times of the year when Formula One isn't racing, when it's a downtime in the sport. But we still have a couple more months to go, lots of races to go, and we'll be here the entire way. So anyway, like I say, thank you for downloading and listening to the show. If you enjoy what you hear here and you want to help us out, it's really easy. All you need to do is just head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to your podcast, and leave a review and rating there. And that certainly helps out more than you could ever imagine, and we truly appreciate it. And I really hope that you guys enjoy the Belgian Grand Prix. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping for a good one. And after all the excitement and insanity we had at the German Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago, I have to admit, I'm looking forward and hoping that we might have a wet race, but certainly seems that Mother Nature is going to provide us with a dry and sunny, or perhaps maybe even a cloudy race. So anyways, we can't always get what we want, but we can always wish. And that's it. I'm going to wrap it up there. Thanks again. Have fun watching the race this weekend, and we'll be back this time next week. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast.
If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com.
Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.